It's Friday, March 11th, and I know you guys are getting ready to draft. We have done a lot of drafts over the last few days, some mock drafts, some real drafts, and we have takeaways that could be very helpful for you. I'm Adam Azer. I got Heath Cummings and Scott White. You can follow us on Twitter. I am at Adam Azer, A-I-Z-E-R, at CBS Scott White, and at Heath Cummings SR, Heath Cummings Sr., at Heath Cummings SR. Well, good morning, guys. Happy Friday. What's going on this weekend? Big plans?
I'll probably watch some Fuller House.
Well, you got to be done with it soon. I mean, that can't take all weekend.
I don't watch much through the week. I'm going to go to the beach tomorrow.
Nice.
About it.
This is my least favorite point in the week, Adam, because you kind of opened the door into just how little I have going on.
Hey, me too, man.
I thought you were going to say that Friday was your least favorite.
Yeah, I was like, what?
Oh, no, Friday's great.
Okay.
I don't really mind not having much going on, mind you.
Right.
But it doesn't make for good listening.
It's a big college basketball weekend. I can't wait for that.
Go Jayhawks.
It go Miami. And go Georgia, sure, for Scott. Also,
are they still playing?
Sure.
I'm guessing they're done.
I haven't paid attention to college basketball since I was in college.
They don't usually make it to the weekend.
No, they are playing. They're playing South Carolina tonight.
Oh, well, that's a winnable. That's the thing about the SEC basketball is, I mean, Georgia could win that tournament. I'm not sure they have more than one tournament team besides Kentucky.
I don't know. Florida's a bubble team. I have no idea. Tennessee, I think they're out now. Anyway, March Madness, hooray. So, yeah, we'll talk about all that. I think you guys should go out with Al Melchior because today is his birthday. And I want all of our listeners to tweet Al Melchior at Al Melk CBS and tweet him a little happy birthday message because Al's the man. So happy birthday, Al. Scott had two extremely interesting drafts. Our head-to-head points mock draft yesterday and our auction, a real draft, our auction that we're actually playing out on Wednesday. Very fascinating teams. Can't wait to talk about that. But first, guys, it's time for our lunatic of the day. And that is Goose Gossage. This man is off the rails. And I will say that as a Yankees fan, I've been aware of this for years because whenever, especially during the steroids era, whenever the papers needed an inflammatory quote to sell newspapers, they would just go to Goose Gossage. And it is such a joke. So don't listen to anything this man says. I am tired, so sick and tired of Goose Gossage. And I've said my piece.
I've never heard any of Goose Gossage's craziness before. I know he had some pretty important moments in Royals baseball history. Pitching for the Yankees back when that was a rivalry. But what he thinks now doesn't move the needle much for me now.
Oh, well, he's just.
He was the pitcher during the Pine Tar incident.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why anyone really cares. I mean, he used to play baseball. Okay.
Yeah, I know, right? Exactly. It's like, what?
No, he says something that you don't like. Okay. Why does it impact anybody's life?
Well, I'm more mad at like the media for even interviewing him at this point because you know it's like the crazy uncle that you invite over for dinner and you just know it's not going to end well. So it's just annoying already. All right. We can move on. I'm going to give you some names that we haven't talked too much about.
One quick thing.
All right.
You're in the media, right?
Yeah, but I'm criticizing him.
He was the first thing you wanted to talk about on Fantasy
Baseball. Yeah, but I'm not having him on the podcast so I can have some headline that says, like, Goose Gossage tells CBS Sports that this guy's crazy for flipping his bat. Like, no, I don't want Goose Gossage on the show.
Okay.
So, anyway, let's talk about these guys. Jose Reyes. Let's revisit Jose Reyes. What do you think happens? When would you take Jose Reyes?
I haven't been motivated to take him at all, quite honestly. I have him. I think he may technically be in my top 12 shortstops. Usually I filled that position before I have to go that deep. And if I haven't, I usually just wait until somebody else takes him. Because I think there's a non-zero chance he doesn't play at all this year. The trial for his... his charges.
I was really looking forward to what word you were going to use because like it was really like you're trying to tiptoe through this alleged offense.
Yeah. Well, what he's been charged for. Doesn't begin until opening day, and that could take some time. And then obviously there's a suspension.
Yeah.
To come after that. And from what I've heard and seen, it sounds like the assumption is it's going to be more than the 30 games Billy Hamilton's getting. And well, the Rockies aren't really.
Billy Hamilton got 30 games?
Aroldis Chapman.
I'm sorry. Aroldis Chapman.
Yeah.
I don't know why I said Billy Hamilton.
I was like, wow.
And now I've lost my train of thought.
It's okay. I have dropped Jose Reyes to the Asdrubal Cabrera, Ian Desmond, Elvis Andrus section of my rankings. The other, in other words, the oh crap, I forgot to take a shortstop section. I guess I better take one of these guys. And the problem is that Reyes isn't lasting, and neither is Desmond.
Mm-hmm.
Reyes isn't lasting as long as Drubal or Andrus, so I'm going to end up with one of those guys instead.
I took him in our auction.
To finish the point, now that I've regained my train of thought.
Okay.
Trevor Story wins the job in spring training, and he clearly has a future in the majors. He's performing well by the time the suspension ends.
It could be a never-ending story.
Exactly. It could be. Maybe the Rockies just don't want Reyes back. Maybe it wouldn't be worth it to take the PR hit, you know? Maybe they just trade him for pennies on the dollar or just don't invite him back and swallow the money. I think these are all viable possibilities.
I don't know. I think before we start speculating, they might just swallow the money. How much money is he owed?
I don't think it really matters.
Oh, I can't.
If they're already content with what they have at shortstop, what does it matter?
He is signed through 2017, it looks like. And I think he's owed $22 million this year and $22 million next year.
Well, I took him in our auction for $5, and I think one of the annoying out of 260, one of the annoying things is you can't put him on your DL. You know, he takes in a roster spot.
Right.
He's suspended. So I sort of regret it. We'll see. I mean, it could pay off down the line, but.
Yeah, he could be back in mid-May and it was $5 well spent. I actually liked him going to Colorado. I thought he was a sleeper of sorts before this happened.
Let's just say, since we started off by saying there's a non-zero chance that he doesn't play this year, there's a non-zero chance that the case gets settled.
Yep.
And he doesn't get in trouble.
Oh, but
well,
even if he gets settled,
he'll still get suspended.
I mean, what if the Chargers are just dropped?
Well, that's what happened with Aroldis Chapman, and he's still got 30 games. So
yeah.
I think it's pretty
unlikely. Heard as many details about what the allegations are against Reyes as Chapman. I don't think he fired a gun in his garage nine times.
No, there's no gun involved. It doesn't seem so. I think there's probably there's no way he cannot get suspended. I think you have to kind of approach it like that. It's just
okay.
This day and age, you know, he's going to get something.
So best case scenario is he misses 30 days.
No, not necessarily. Maybe it's. I'm not going to speculate. I have no idea, but I think there's something.
Okay.
But no, he's a tough guy to draft because at Coors Field he hit really well. With Colorado, he hit really poorly because he did horribly in all the NL road parks. That was weird. But at Coors Field,
he became a Rocky really quickly, didn't he?
What do you mean? Oh yeah, I know. But
right at home, terrible on the road.
Yeah, but like so bad. 323, 351, 462, with 14 steals. Oh no, I'm sorry. With 14 runs, I think 3 steals. That makes more sense at Coors Field in 22 games. Moving on to something off subject here that I was just thinking about in our auction league. I asked Scott for a very reasonable rule change before the draft started and Scott refused.
Yep.
And I think Scott should reconsider. I think we're going to put some pressure on him right now. All I want, you have five, son, you have 5 DL slots per team in that really pretty deep league. 30 man rosters, 12 teams and 5 DL slots. Come on now. That's just hoarding at this point. You need to cut down the DL slots, Scott.
Whitey. No.
It's just the way we've always done it, which usually is
a bad
good reason for to continue to do things.
No, but it's a terrible reason.
But I don't see how it's a problem. And I certainly don't think it's a good idea 2 minutes before the auction is going to start to try and get 12 people to agree on a rule change.
You know when it's a worse idea? After everyone's already completed the auction and picked their team.
It doesn't affect anything. If you drop that from 5 to 3, it wouldn't change a damn thing.
What if I told you that I had Michael Brantley, Jung Ho Gong, and 2 other players that I wanted to have on my DL?
But you don't. and three DL slots would work perfectly fine for you. Right?
I don't know. I
what if I
yet.
Told you? Thanks for that 30 for 30, by the way.
You're welcome.
Alright, fine. You think
if,
about
if
it,
this
Scott.
If this was the league I initially, if this was my construction from the get-go, I would have probably said two DL slots, maybe three.
You're the commissioner!
It's a league I inherited, so we just kept the same rules.
Change
and
them.
I don't really have a problem with, like, if it was one of those things that I really thought affected the way the competitive balance of the league.
No, I
would.
Have,
I would go ahead and change it. I wouldn't even ask for an opinion.
There you go.
I would just change it.
I was on your
this
side.
Is a big deal.
I was on your side before your last two sentences, because what you basically just said was, I don't see any reason to change this rule, so we're not going to have a vote. But if I did see a reason to change the rule, we wouldn't have a vote then either. I'd just change it.
Yeah. How's that?
That's
the way I like to commission.
That's okay. Fine.
You want to play? You want to play
you.
In my league? You follow my rules.
Yeah, you're a good enough commissioner where I trust you. I think that's a little risky with some other commissioners, not me.
Yeah, I don't.
Not have a league to play in if they.
I definitely like league votes for rule changes, but I don't think you should propose rule changes 2 seconds before the auction starts and expect to get a vote.
Exactly.
I'd have to agree with that.
So I'm with Scott on this one instance, but against him generally.
Three more guys I wanted to talk
Everything
about.
Everything else.
Three more guys that I wanted to talk about, and you can just rank them. Let's say, well, either format. Odubel Herrera, Josh Reddick, Delino DeShields. Haven't spent too much time talking about them. Herrera, Reddick, DeShields. How would you rank those three?
I would rank them Reddick, DeShields, and Herrera. And in a roto league, probably flip-flop DeShields and Reddick. Reddick, I'm thinking more for points leagues. And Reddick, I think, is actually undervalued in points leagues because he struck out like 62 times last year. It was considered a stud at the start of the year. I know he had some at bat issues as it progressed. They sat him more against left-handed pitchers, so that maybe dropped him a bit in the final rankings. But I don't think that's 100% what they're going to do this year.
They've got a lot of players.
I know they do, but he also expressed strong dissatisfaction about not playing every day, and they're working on an extension with him. So I think they want to keep him happy. I think they're motivated to. And with a late round pick, I think it's a worthy gamble given the power, the combination of power and making consistent contact.
For Josh
I've got
Reddick.
Them DeShields, Reddick, Herrera, and Odubel is someone that I've felt uncomfortable with how I have him ranked. I feel like he is somebody that could be much, much better than where we've got him, which is basically, I don't know that Scott has him in his top 300. And I've got him towards the bottom of my top 300, which means you shouldn't be drafting him. And you probably should be drafting him in mixed roto leagues.
Okay.
So I probably need to move Odubel up.
All right. Fair enough. Then let's talk about we have a few news and notes. Rougned Odor, minor oblique injury. Kyle Schwarber could miss a week with what seems like is a minor knee injury. Although just keep in mind, a lot of things get labeled minor, turn out to be more. Not saying that's the case here, but. You know, and Jared Weaver has a stiff neck, and I didn't see any other news. Are there any injuries that are really worth noting right now?
I don't think that we haven't noted in the past. Maybe, and maybe you guys talked about this when I wasn't on, but Sean Tolleson, he has a back issue that has delayed him so far in spring training, and it doesn't sound like a big deal, but one little setback and all of a sudden Sean Tolleson isn't going to be ready for opening day, and all of a sudden Keone Kayla is striking out hitters left and right, and all of a sudden Sean Tolleson is demoted to a setup role. So it's I could see, especially for a not lights out closer like him, spring injuries are especially concerning. I think I said especially twice. That's how especially it is.
especially. I saw something, and maybe I'm remembering wrong from last week, but Jung Ho Kang, it came out yesterday, has no timetable for when he can start doing base running drills. And I was under the impression that was supposed to start happening this week. And maybe that was some other type of drills that he was going to start doing this week.
I saw today he's going to run straight lines. He's not ready to run
Right.
To round bases.
I think it's less likely that he's going to be ready for opening day if he's not running bases yet.
Well, are you less infatuated with him on draft day now?
No, not yet.
Okay.
But I could be convinced to move that way if, like, we get a week and a half, 2 weeks from now, and he still can't run the bases.
I think we're at the point in spring training where it's time to start talking about team names. And I want everybody to either tweet us, tweet me, whatever, or email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com, and let's start getting some good team names here.
You got so mad about this yesterday.
Because it's ridiculous. I came up with, I think, a pretty good team name. Just like on the spot in our draft, we were drafting and, you know, chatting with each other, and I don't know how it came up, but I had an Alanis Morissette team name. It was Darno, and I thought it was pretty funny. You know, it wasn't great, but it got crapped on. All right. And then there were like a string of more and more Alanis Morissette.
More and more a set.
Yeah, there you go. Puns. And none of them were as good as mine. And then you, Heath, like totally ripped mine off. And you were like, oh, that's good. What was yours again?
U-Y-U.
Right.
Which you were using the regular U.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
Otta instead of ought, because the word is otta, not ought.
Yeah, Darno, though. Was
Sano.
You ought Sano, yeah. That's not as good as mine.
Everyone in the draft room seemed to like it more.
And I even had my three U's in capital letters. Like, I really committed to it. And then I had August in Gossage County, which I thought was very topical. And a play on that movie, August in Osage County or whatever, that I'll never see.
No.
Not even for $1 million.
I'm not familiar with this movie.
Oh, it's a total chick flick.
Okay.
That I, again, will never, ever see. So, but if you have good team names, fire away. And next week, we'll tell you about the podcast league as well. So, how about our drafts lately? What are some things you've noticed? I know people want to talk about auctions. So, what were your takeaways? What can we give as advice for auctioneers and people involved in auctions in the coming weeks?
We had done two the week before, right? An AL and an NL only, and then we did the mixed. And the first thing that stuck out to me was, I mean, I'm the guy that always says in drafts, I've got to wait and see how the first few rounds go. And Adam, you said you need to go in with a plan, and it's not quite like drafts because you need to have your plan and stick to it. And I don't agree.
Well, no. I think you have to adjust, but I do think you need to come in with a plan. Like, I came up with a plan, but I did adjust. I spent much more on pitching than I ever did in the past because that's the way the market was. But that said, I do think you need more of a plan than just showing up in a draft room, seeing who's available to you, putting guys in a queue and drafting. Like,
you made the cardinal sin in that auction, correct?
Which is what?
You left money on the table.
Yeah, I don't care.
Well, that's like, it's pretty important.
I didn't know I was going to leave money on the table. It just, I had so
everyone
much more
else
money.
Did.
Yeah, but the way the draft broke down, I don't know that Adam has anything to be upset about leaving money on the table because the mid-tier players were such values by comparison. And that's something to keep in mind. That's why
always,
you know, I get what Heath's saying about you have to be flexible. I think Adam's kind of acknowledging the same thing, but with a plan.
Yes.
I do like having a plan going into an auction, exactly how much I want to spend at every position, but not holding myself to spending that exact amount at every position, to just having a framework, something to work off of. So if I overspend or underspend at a position, I then reallocate those dollars and always know what I'm capable of spending at any given position. That's kind of the way my planning works. But I think, where you might want to call an audible and kind of reconstruct your plan on the fly is if you see early on, you know, usually the highest end players are nominated first. If you see that they're consistently going for more than they're projected for, or consistently going for less than they're projected for, that's going to give you some indication of what the money situation is going to be later in the auction. And in this particular auction, they all went for significantly more. And so Heath, I looked closer at his team than Adam's, but I feel like Adam kind of took advantage of the same thing. You were able to get these players for, you know, half as much as you would have if everybody went by the book. Some examples. Do you have your team pulled up, Heath?
Yeah, I've got my team here. I was surprised by the value of a lot of these players, specifically Justin Upton and Lorenzo Cain at $17 and $18.
Yeah, now, let's compare to the high-end outfielders. You know, what was Harper, around 40? I got J.D. Martinez.
No, Harper was 50.
Oh, 50.
48, I think.
48.
Trout was 50. Harper was 48. Goldschmidt, 47. Kershaw, 47.
And like J.D. Martinez, I got for 25. So Justin Upton for 17 was outstanding. That was one of the best values of the draft.
Well, I think even Lorenzo Cain at 18 was even better compared to those. You know, most of the outfielders in that same tier were going for 25. Heath got Jason Kipnis for 10. He got Jordan Zimmermann for 7.
Brett Gardner for 7.
Brett Gardner, 7. Alex Gordon, 6, I think is good. Kendrys Morales, 5. Brian McCann for 8. All good values. And it's hard not to like Heath's team because of it. There, you look at that team, there's really not a weakness. Maybe the pitching staff, but or Roto League especially, I think you can work around that. You have your ace in Corey Kluber.
Oh, wait, no, your pitching staff sucks, dude.
What you see is that I don't have a number 2. I've got probably 2 number 3s.
Let's
read
it.
He has Corey Kluber. He has an ace.
Yeah,
that's something. That's enough to work with. I think he'll be fine.
And I've got saves.
Yes, you have saves. You have Kenley Jansen, Jervis Familia, and Will Smith. You have Kluber, Iwakuma, Rodon, Cashner, Bauer, and Jordan Zimmermann. Yeah, your pitching staff sucks. But
no,
you can make up for it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that it sucks. I don't like it. But I don't think it's in the bottom 3 or 4 teams.
Yeah, there's certainly worse pitching staffs than that. And I like what Heath did.
Me too.
If I usually for a mixed auction where I'm relying on, you know, the low dollar players still having a lot of breakout potential, some of them, and knowing the waiver wire is going to be plentiful and there'll be breakouts nobody even sees coming. If you're aggressive on the waiver wire, you can fill in the gaps there. I really like taking the stars and scrubs approach in a mixed league. But if you see everybody's overspending, then you know you're going to get values later. So that would have been a good audible to call for me. At the same time, while I probably would trade my team for Heath's, there is kind of a downside to doing what Heath did, loading up on the Gardner, Gordon, Kendrys Morales types, the guys who are just have no chance of really joining the elite crop at their positions. And that's that you really don't have any maneuverability. You're stuck with this group of good but not great players, and you're going to live and die with them.
It's not like I don't have great players.
Yeah, you have some great players, but you don't have, you have what, like 3?
Chris Davis,
Carlos Correa.
Rendon could absolutely be great.
He could. And Corey Kluber.
And then I guess that's where the question mark comes in. Jung Ho Gong's my corner infielder. Well, he's probably going to be one of the best corner infielders all year long.
That's the hope. That's
yeah, I don't think we
hope.
Can there, pass it off.
Well, we've got him ranked as a mid-range shortstop.
Yeah.
So even if he's a middle infielder, we've got him ranked as a mid-range third baseman.
Oh, yeah, but they're not necessarily going to perform like they're ranked. There's a reason he's going in round 9 as opposed to round 4, even if we think he has round 4 upside.
Right.
Okay. So
who are your players that have the potential to be great?
I have Paul Goldschmidt, Clayton Kershaw, Jose Altuve, Nolan Arenado. I mean, they're all 4 first round type players. Todd Frazier, Yoenis Cespedes, and then it ends. Then I'm going to be
Wait. I want to repeat this because Scott had such an interesting strategy. He went crazy on high end talent. So again, you have your infield is ridiculous. Goldschmidt, Altuve, Arenado, and then, I mean, those are your and Kershaw, and you have Kershaw. But
yeah,
you also
I have Todd Frazier and Yoenis Cespedes.
Yeah, I was going to get to them, but those aren't like first or second round picks. You have
four
first
basically first round caliber players.
Yeah.
And then two players who I would still also consider high end. Then my next most expensive player after those six is Sean Tolleson, the $5 closer I bought. So,
yeah.
So, you know, I didn't, the end game didn't go as well as I would have liked. I feel like if I had saved a few, like if I had only, if I let Tolleson go to someone else, there were other low end closers who went for $2 or $3. If I had those couple extra dollars that I spent on the $5 Tolleson, if I had let Ian Kennedy go to Heath for $1 instead of jumping in there with two, I think I could have gotten three or four $2 players that would have been significantly better than the $1, some of the $1 players I got. So, you know, I didn't love the way it turned out, even though I basically followed my plan. But at the same time, with those four studs, if I am consistent in playing the waiver wire, if, you know, my Danny Valencia $1 pick pans out, if Matt Holliday $1 pick, Jorge Soler, these are still guys with genuine upside. If I get, you know, a couple good breaks with them, I feel like I'm going to have a team that may start out behind the safe construction of Heath's team, but you know, as I'm adding on, filling in those gaps, really, the high end players are going to set me apart in the end, and I'll be able, they'll carry me over him as I fill in those gaps. Hopefully that made sense. That was
no, I think that makes sense. I we said all of the good players on Scott's team. I think we should just read so people wonder what's the downside.
Yeah,
his outfield: Yoenis Cespedes,
yep,
Leonis Martin,
right,
Danny Valencia, Matt Holliday, Jorge Soler.
Yes,
and his catchers are Wilson Ramos and Kurt Casale. And, I mean, you said my pitching staff sucked.
Yeah, Scott's is worse.
Ian Kennedy, Gio Gonzalez, Jimmy Nelson, John Lackey, and then Lester and Kershaw.
And Jaime Garcia.
And Jaime Garcia, I'm sorry. Yeah. I missed him, too. But
I actually forgot I had Lester. That's, yeah, that's I was good thinking one. It was Kershaw and a bunch of junk.
No, it's Kershaw and Lester and a bunch of junk.
Yeah, which I thought if I got Kershaw. I feel like, I think I said this on a podcast the other day, I feel like, while Kershaw may go earlier in a points league because pitchers as a whole do, I feel like the advantage he has over the rest of the position is bigger in Roto because he is like the one pitcher who I feel like you can count on for a sub 2 ERA, probably in the whole time I've been playing fantasy. And that's, you know, obviously a big advantage over, you know, the second best pitcher might have an ERA a full run higher than Kershaw.
So, Scott, if you could do it over, yeah, would you maybe take one fewer elite player and just have three?
Well, that's a good point. Maybe. What's interesting is I had planned to get Kershaw, Goldschmidt, Arenado, like I did, and Altuve. I'd planned to get those four like I ended up doing. But I'd also planned to get either Harper or Trout. Now, they didn't go an amount I was comfortable spending on, especially since it was apparent I was going to have to spend more on these high-end players than I budgeted for. So I ended up turning that Harper Trout pick into both Todd Frazier and Yoenis Cespedes. And it may have been wise to break Kershaw up into two pitchers kind of like that, maybe a Jacob deGrom and a Corey Kluber or whatever.
Right.
If I had to do it over again, that might be one thing I do. And like I said, I would just be a little more disciplined with the end game. I got kind of sloppy. Actually, the Tolleson pick, you know, there's a plus $1 button in the auction room. If you draft on CBSSports.com, there's a button where it just says bid, and it's an amount that's $1 more what the current bid is. And if you press that button, you know, at the same time somebody else does, you could end up paying a lot more than you expect it to, because it'll just,
yeah,
you know, it'll have gone up a dollar before your click processed, you know?
It does happen.
And so I always avoid it. The one time I hit it in this auction was when Tolleson was at $3 and I wanted to go four, but somebody else jumped in with four and it gave me him for five. And it was at a late stage where every pick is critical. Every dollar is critical. And so that kept me from jumping in on a $2 player that I would have liked more than one of the $1 players I had to settle for really late. And that's a big deal. It doesn't sound like a big deal, but when you're having to wait until everybody's out of money to be promised the player you nominate, you know?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of good players will have gone off the board by then. So,
So
that's just one example of how I kind of messed up the end game and wish I had done it better.
Right. And you and I had very, very different auctions. I did not get a player until, like, I think I had the 43rd player off the board. Maybe it was the 34th. I don't remember, but I was completely uninvolved for a while. And my mistake, I guess. So this is what happened. I always want to come away with at least two elite players. I only have one in AJ Pollock, and that's my biggest regret. And that's why I ended up with $7 or $8 left over, as Heath was mentioning, or something like that, because maybe even 10, because all the guys were going for more than I was willing to spend. And I probably should have adjusted to that and just bit the bullet, like McCutcheon I should have paid 33 for. But instead, I let, I think Chris Towers get him for 32, and I ended up with AJ Pollock for 36, and he's my only, you know, first or second round pick. And that is a regret of mine. So I should have adjusted to that. However, I did like what I did. I had the most money by far at the end, and I got every single guy that I wanted at the end, pretty much. I had $35 left at one point. Nobody else had more than 16. And then I was able to get, you know, Drew Smyly for 10, Joe Ross for 3, three closers for $11, AJ Ramos, Santiago Casilla, and Sean Doolittle for a combined $11. Byron Buxton for 1 at the end, Dexter Fowler for 5, Will Myers for 4, I like that a lot, Starlin Castro for 3. So I was able to put a list of sleepers with high upside together and get every single one of them because I was the bully at the end who had the most money.
But I guess my question is, is that worth having Ellsbury and Dickerson as your second and third outfielders instead of Kane and Upton?
I don't really like Kane all that much.
Okay. You like
No, wait a second. Those are my third and fourth outfielders. I have AJ Pollock and JD Martinez.
Okay.
So I actually like my outfielders a lot. I have Pollock, Martinez, Ellsbury, Dickerson, and Fowler. I think I have very good outfielders. And then my pitching is solid. I have Cole, who I always get, Salazar, Joe Ross, Verlander, Smyly, and then I spent $6 on Jose Quintana, which was dumb. It's either Verlander or Salazar, but I think it's Salazar.
I'm not sure I like either one of them better than Zimmerman.
Oh, I like them both better than Zimmerman.
Okay.
I guarantee it. Mark it down right now. I guarantee they both have better years than Jordan Zimmerman.
I would like if you were going to say one of them will have a better year than Jordan Zimmerman,
both
I'm sure
will.
One of them will.
Guaranteed both.
Okay. Which pitchers, Verlander and
Salazar?
Guaranteed both will be
guaranteed.
Better than Zimmerman better year. I'm not sure I agree with that.
I would bet on it. But guarantee is a little strong.
Oh, we're going. Well, that's it. We're going bold today. I guarantee it.
Okay.
So,
you guarantee that both of those pitchers will be better. And to be clear, especially in Verlander's case, injury is no excuse.
Yes. Injury is no excuse.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So, boy, I really put myself out there. All right. Final thoughts on the auction. Try to get more elite players than I got. That was a mistake I made.
I like your team, though. I don't. I think. Yeah, this was an auction we did with people outside of CBS too. I think the CBS guys as a whole showed well.
Good.
You know, I just one last way to describe this the Stars and Scrubs strategy, because I feel like this is the one that really makes it click for people. You know how mid-season a lot of times if you're a good player, you'll find yourself with more players than you could roster and desperate to make a 2-for-1 trade for a true stud. That happens to me every year in more leagues than I can count. And I just can't do it because you know, everybody knows it's kind of habit. Turn down the 2-for-1 trade, right? The auction gives you the ability to cut out the middleman. Just go for the stars right away, trusting in your ability to accumulate that depth over the course of the season. So hopefully that's the clearest way I can put it and why I choose to attack the auction the way I do.
To that point, I don't ever make 2-for-1 trade offers. You always include the worst player on their team because it makes them feel good to see they're upgrading that worst player to whoever you're giving them.
That's clever.
That is
clever.
I
have to try that.
Yeah. Okay, I just want to finish up here. Scott's Stars and Scrubs approach is very dependent on the depth of your league. You have to have a waiver wire. Is that fair to say? You have to have a...
Yes.
Yes.
I used to try to do this in AL and NL, and I would be like, fifth or sixth place every year. Last year I went away from that and I won both the AL and the NL with a more even distribution of dollars. So I would say that's absolutely true.
And if you nominate someone for $1 and you expect to get that player, be prepared to spend $3 if you really want him, because there's a good chance somebody will come in with $2. So anyone you nominate for $1, if you really want him, spend $3. And did you end up with Gene Segura? Because I'm really warming up to Gene Segura. Yes, you did. You got him for $3. He was a top 12 shortstop in Roto last year. If he's going to lead off for the Diamondbacks and steal bases, I think he's a really nice fallback option as shortstop.
Yep. He was the guy I targeted for some cheap steals.
And
he may end up delivering on batting average as well. He's always had a high contact rate. The Diamondbacks clearly like him a lot. I don't necessarily trust the Diamondbacks' opinions on things, but he's obviously...
I was going to say, are you coming around on the Diamondbacks being good this year?
No, I'm just not completely over that 2013 season, I think it was, where Gene Segura looked like a top five shortstop.
Heath, we kind of monopolized here. You have any final thoughts on the auction?
I don't know that there's any more to be said about this auction. We have said many things.
Okay. Then let's go to the other mock drafts, and then we'll spend time on emails at the end. I see three guys going in our drafts around the same time, and they're relevant in both points leagues and roto leagues. All three are outfielders who I think give you some type of combination of power and speed and could really fill out your outfield nicely in, I don't know, 11th, 12th round. Adam Eaton, Dexter Fowler, Brett Gardner. Adam Eaton, Dexter Fowler, Brett Gardner. Do you see the three of them the same way, and who's your favorite of that three?
I kind of lump all three together. I think, actually, Dexter Fowler might have the most upside of the three, and he tends to go, at least in, according to ADP, he goes several rounds after the other two. So I might say he's my favorite looking at it both ways.
I've got Eaton and Fowler ranked back to back, but I have Gardner about 10 spots ahead of him in my outfield ranking. So I may be a bigger Gardner fan than I realized I was.
I worry a little bit about Gardner just because he hasn't played yet. I don't think he's played anyway, and he's still recovering from a wrist injury he sustained in the wild card game.
So he's one of those guys we talked about the last time we were all together, guys that miss spring training that turn out to be bad.
He should be back pretty soon, though, so it's not a huge concern. And I think he's going to steal more bases this year.
I expect so as well. I've got him higher in Roto for sure.
Okay, I'm seeing Andrew McCutchen dropping out of the first round in two of the recent drafts that we've done. I think they were both mocks, but is that justified, McCutchen being an early second-round pick?
I think that's kind of weird. I was almost wondering how much longer Stanton's knee injury would have to nag him before I would move McCutchen ahead of Stanton in my outfield rankings.
I actually kind of get the McCutchen dropping thing. I do have him ranked in my first round, but I've been saying from the beginning it's kind of just a legacy ranking because I don't think he's... My expectation for him is more like second round production with the way his steals have dropped the last couple years. So, you know... There's a safety. I compare him to Pollock because McCutchen and Pollock are next to each other in my rankings, and obviously McCutchen has the safety factor going for him. But I actually like Pollock more. If Pollock started going ahead of McCutchen in drafts, I wouldn't necessarily be opposed to it.
I want to point one thing out about McCutchen. He had a bit of a down year last year. He was the number 7 outfielder in points, the number 14 in Roto. But I seem to recall him playing through a knee injury early and sort of lying about it. And he was terrible in his first 26 games. McCutchen batted 188 with a .279 on base and only a .292 slugging. And then over his next 100 games, he had an OPS over 1,000. He got back to being himself. And then he trailed off. Maybe he's not that good. He finished a little slow in the last month of the season. But I think he was basically himself, which in 2014 was number 4 in points, number 6 in Roto at the outfield position. But even that, number 4 in points, number 6 in Roto, is kind of a borderline first-round pick, right? Because they only gave you 18 steals in 2014 and 11 last year.
Yeah, if your first-round pick finishes 4th amongst outfielders, then you did a good job.
Yeah. It shouldn't go too late in the second round if he goes in the second round. Let's put it that way. Scott, looking at a team that you drafted yesterday in our points league mock, you went really pitcher-heavy. And you ended
I'm
up
just with, the oddball today, aren't
you,
I?
Well, we're definitely going to talk about Scott's teams because he did some crazy, crazy stuff. And I was kind of taunting him the whole way through it.
Oh, really?
Yes.
What a shock.
saying, well, you got to take another pitcher. And he just kept doing it.
Yep.
Well, okay, we'll get to that in 1 second. What I wanted to say is you ended up with two guys pretty late that really changed things in terms of position depth in points leagues. And there are actually three guys I wanted to bring up. And one is Sonny Gray, who I took as one of my aces in that draft. That
your
really
ace,
is
your number one pitcher.
Yeah, and I'm okay with that in a points league, much more so than a roto league.
I mean, you know that you're behind everybody else at the number one pitcher. But.
Yeah, yeah, and okay. I went heavy on hitter. I think my first four picks were hitters. So, and I did it because it was a mock. I wanted to see how it would turn out. But Gray makes the starting pitcher pool, I think, a little bit deeper in points leagues. And then two guys on Scott's team, Carlos Santana and Denard Span, mm-hmm. much, much better in points leagues. They changed the position depth a little bit.
Yes, they do. And it's probably a good time to say that Carlos Santana, I'm beginning to think, is the most undervalued player in this format. He had one of the worst seasons of his career last year, and he played, I think, four fewer games than Adrian Gonzalez. Finished only 10.5 points behind Adrian Gonzalez. And that, again, was in one of his worst years. Just two home runs more would have put him past Gonzalez. And we've seen him hit 10 home runs more than he hit last year. So those walks for Santana, and I don't, maybe it's just the fact he's only first base eligible now. Everybody's down on him, but this format, it those walks make a huge difference.
Well, let's look at Scott's crazy ass team. pardon my language. I can't believe I just said that. Let's look at Scott's crazy team.
It deserves
team.
It. If ever we were ever going to say that on this podcast, it should be for Scott's team.
I do apologize, though. It just came out. All right. So anyway, Scott, your pitching staff has Clayton Kershaw, Jose Fernandez, David Price, and Carlos Carrasco, with Julio Teheran as your number five starter. And you actually have a SPARP, Doug Fister, as a reliever with Jake McGee. And what do you think about, so again, I'll just read your team. It's Kershaw, Price, Fernandez, Carrasco. What rounds did you take those guys in?
1, 3, 4, and 5.
And your hitters are Posey, who was probably your second round pick.
Mm-hmm.
Carlos Santana at first, Joe Panik, Anthony Rendon, Jung Ho Gong, Michael Brantley, Hunter Pence, Hanley Ramirez, Kendrys Morales. And then on your bench, you have Gerardo Parra, Denard Span, and Alex Rodriguez. Heath,
yeah,
what do
those,
you think about
Scott's
team?
Those bench players are worth mentioning, in the outfield especially, Parra and Span.
And Heath, what do you think about Scott's team?
You know, I thought that the problem with our average draft position in points leagues was that the projections had really overemphasized pitching in points leagues. It turns out that it's just Scott. Scott is the problem with our average draft position. He took four pitchers in the first five rounds.
You don't know how incredible this is, Heath.
I am incredulous about it.
Over the last 8 years, I can't tell you how often I've hammered home the point. You can't overload pitching too early.
You did.
I did. Now, it was a mock, which, you know, I try to approach mocks like they're real.
You would never do this in a real draft.
This was not something that I did not come into this draft with this conscious plan of, let me try going with a bunch of pitchers.
People kept taking the hitters that you really like.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. I felt like with each pick, except for Posey in the second round, and even then I was tempted to take Scherzer instead because I was surprised, you know, it was late second round.
You went through the fifth round and you had four pitchers and a catcher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
with every pick, I felt like any of my hitter options there would have been a reach. And the pitchers to me stood out as clearly more studly by comparison. So I just went with it. And, you know, part of the reason I decided mid-draft to go ahead and try this is because I feel like there are so many inefficiencies when it comes to drafting hitters in a points league, that usually, you know, usually I'm just not able to take advantage of because I've already filled those spots. Santana, I talked about as one. Panik, I've mentioned a few times on a per game basis, was like a top six second baseman in this format last year because the strikeout to walk is so good. So I just tried to, I just told myself, you know what? I'm going to see how many of those guys who always seem to slip through the cracks in this format I can get, and maybe I'll have the stud pitching staff to go along with
who
it.
Who are you dropping?
The super team.
Who are you dropping? If we're playing this league out, you have to drop somebody before the season even starts.
For what?
Well, your shortstop is Jung Ho Kang and your outfielder is Michael Brantley.
Oh, no, I got backup outfielders. I don't have a backup shortstop.
So he doesn't have to drop anybody.
Probably like Rich Hill or something.
No, he doesn't have to drop anybody. Puts him on the DL.
I can put Jung Ho Kang on the DL.
And Michael Brantley.
So that's what I did. It didn't go as well as I kind of dreamed it up because I thought, okay, I'll get Prince Fielder, who is, you know, basically a stud first baseman without the first base eligibility. I'll get David Ortiz, who's the same thing. I'll get one or the other. Obviously, I couldn't get both. I'll get, I'm trying to think of some of the other examples of players who went before I could get to them.
It was just, there was so much angst. I remember a draft like this, and you didn't take pitchers like this, but there was a draft like this towards the end of last year where every time someone was taken, you were really irritated.
I remember that draft too, and that was my worst league last year, which I don't know what that says for this one. But I hated that team when we came out of the draft. I don't hate this team. I think it could have gone a little better than it did, but I think there's enough upside or just exploiting the peripherals at every offensive position that while I'm not going to have the best offense in the league, I think it'll hold its own, and I think my pitching will be enough to set me apart, clearly.
One of the things I want to say about loading up on starting pitchers about like that is if you have four guys out of five that you're starting every week that you will never take out of your lineup, it does limit your ability to go out and get two-star pitchers because there could be a two-star pitcher who has great matchups, and you feel in your gut he's going to outscore Jose Fernandez this week. But you're not going to do it because there's no way you're sitting Jose Fernandez in a one-star week. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, you're right. It's that's part of the reason I don't generally like to do this. And I would say, too, that I think the mock draft you guys did on the air kind of showed this. And obviously the ADPs for our site show it. People in head-to-head leagues, despite what we advise them to do,
tend to stack
the first two rounds with pitchers.
You can't advise them against that anymore.
No, I can.
Yes,
you could
can.
Not do. If you were drafting with a standard group of drafters of what our ADP shows for a head-to-head points leagues, you could never get these four pitchers on your same team because they would all be gone by the middle of round two.
Unless you were playing with 11 people that knew better.
So this was no advantage you could actually get. Exactly. Unless you played with people who knew better, which I was doing. You get what I'm saying? You're trying to undercut my point here.
I really liked my team.
All right, fine. We'll read that and then we'll read emails.
I was very happy with, well, first off, there's this weird thing. Last year, remember how I had Paul Goldschmidt on almost every team last year?
Yeah.
Because I seemingly always had a pick between fourth and sixth or third and sixth, and Goldschmidt fell to me every time. So I had all the Goldschmidt last year, which worked out pretty well. This year, apparently, it's going to be Carlos Correa and Anthony Rizzo. Because I seem to have one of those two. I never have a top three pick. I took Correa in the first, and then amazingly, Joey Votto fell to me in the second. And I was getting a little bit nervous because I was right in the middle of the second round, and I don't love in points leagues taking Chris Davis quite that early. But Votto and I think Davis were the only first baseman left. And I thought, well, somebody's going to take Votto, and then I've got to make that choice on do I really get one of my top seven first basemen. But thankfully, Votto fell to me, and that just made my... I kind of have the opposite team of Scott. Mm-hmm. Like my offense is pretty well stacked with Votto, Kipnis, Frazier, Correa, an outfield of Upton, Cargo, and Gardner. I really liked getting Matt Duffy. Maybe it was very, very late. Maybe my last starter. But then I don't hate my pitching. I've got an ace in Chris Sale. Johnny Cueto is a fine number two.
Maybe.
I except for the fact that Scott thinks he's going to blow out his arm. And then I've got Shields, Ventura, and Pineda to finish up the pitching staff with Kenley Jansen and Cody Allen at closer.
No, you have a good team. No question.
I actually don't like the pitching staff. Even by my old standards, I don't really like
it. I kind of agree. I don't love it. I probably
Well, you
like
don't
it
think Cueto's a two.
I don't think there's an... No, I don't.
I think
he paid for him like he was, but he may not be. And beyond that, I don't feel like the cheap options are especially high upside. I do like Ventura,
right?
But that's it.
Well, okay, Shields has a very good chance of being a top 30 pitcher. He has.
I guess I wasn't even calling him a low end guy. He's a fine number three. I'd prefer him as a number four.
So listen,
and he is my number three.
But listen, that's the difference I think between my pitching staff and Heath's pitching staff. Now Heath does have Chris Sale, and my best pitcher is Sonny Gray or John Lester.
And we're not going to say that Michael Pineda's doesn't have any upside, are we? I mean, sure, he's got injury risk, but if he stays
like
healthy
him.
All year,
I like him.
He's got a ton of upside.
Yeah.
Well, to continue the contrast between Heath's pitching staff and Adams, although Heath has the ace that Adam doesn't in Chris Sale, I like Adam's 1-2 punch of Sonny Gray and John Lester more than Heath's of Sale and Cueto. And I certainly like Adam's 1-2-3 of Gray, Lester, and Salazar more than Heath's 1-2-3 of Sale, Cueto, and Shields.
And again, this all has to do with Johnny Cueto. Because I think Johnny Cueto is basically Lester and Gray.
That's true.
I don't see a difference between those three.
Okay, but listen, this is the last point I wanted to make, and then
other
we're going
to read 6 bad weeks.
We're going to spend the last portion here on emails.
Yeah.
If you are like me in this past draft, whether it's points, whether it's Roto, and you wait on pitching, as I did, I took Sonny Gray and John Lester in like the 5th and 6th rounds, and I was a little bit behind everybody else. But then just about everybody else on my team is high upside. Okay, Danny Salazar, Hisashi Iwakuma, I still, not huge upside, but could be really solid. I have Lance McCullers, I have Joe Ross, I had Eduardo Rodriguez, and Lucas Giolito. So I think between all those guys, I will have a solid pitching staff. I think if you don't have an ace, it's really important to take guys who could, you know, not be necessarily aces, but jump into that next tier if all things go right. And you won't hit on all of them, but get enough of them so that maybe 2 of them come true, and you'll have a lot of upside and a lot of production on your roster.
I really like your team, Adam. I think it's what ideally the kind I want to build. So I really like your team in this league. I really like Heath's in the auction league, and mine are just weird.
Very weird. Could be good, but very, very weird.
Well, I feel much better now. I mean, this is a good week of drafting. I feel really prepared. Next week, we're going to talk sleepers, breakouts, busts, and guys that we end up with a lot. We'll review some ADP. Hopefully this podcast has been helpful for everybody. So, guys, we have not too much time. Let's get to the emails. Let's go through them as quickly as we can. Garrett Pfeiffer from Chicago. I'm having trouble deciding who to take in round 2. Who do you guys normally end up with in round 2? From 13 and on, who do you see becoming first round value? My money is on Chris Bryant.
It depends so much on whether or not I got a first baseman in round 1.
Uh-huh.
When I didn't get a first baseman, then it's been Votto or Chris Davis or Jose Abreu in round 2. Almost exclusively. If I do have a first baseman, AJ Pollock's going past 13. I'd rather have Pollock than Bryant for sure.
That's what I was going to add. He draws the cutoff at 13. I think it's at 15. I think there are 14 first round caliber players. Usually it's Pollock and Altuve that fall to the second round, but sometimes it's Machado. Sometimes it's McCutcheon. So that's, you know, 15 is where you start thinking about Bryant, I think.
And I know there's injury concerns and age concerns with Jose Bautista, and I'm an ageist. But if you're asking for somebody that's not being drafted in the first 15 picks that has first round potential, Joey Bats has to be on the list.
Yeah, you're right.
And Scott takes Buster Posey a lot. I wouldn't take him in the second round.
I've taken him at the end of the second.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Scott takes him toward the end of the second round.
Yeah.
Next email is from Ross. Hey, Huey, Dewey, and Louie. Do you have any thoughts on the shortstop position for the Tampa Bay Rays? So are these guys worth anything in a mixed league or AL only? And what's the guy? The guy from Brad Miller. And who's the other one?
Yeah, we got to let Scott go on this one. This is Scott's guy.
Oh, he used to be.
Bad Brad.
Miller.
I mean, it's a bad park for hitters, and he just hasn't shown enough over the last couple years for me to endorse him. And the fact he bats left-handed, they could easily platoon him with Tim Beckham. He has value in an AL only league, yeah, but that's probably it.
Okay, yeah, it was Tim Beckham. That's who Ross was asking about, him and Brad Miller. All right, JC, great question here from JC. Good luck with this one, buddy. How do I get my wife into fantasy baseball? How do I get my wife into fantasy baseball?
Oh, that was why.
why might be easier to answer.
Yes. No. I don't know. I don't have any experience with trying to get my wife to play fantasy sports. She doesn't have any interest. She likes to watch sports with me. I don't see that My advice would be, unless your wife has shown an interest to play fantasy sports, there is likely no benefit to trying to convince her to play fantasy sports with you.
I've got an idea. This is
why.
Why have her? It's fun. I love talking fantasy football with my fiance. She plays, but here's
okay,
the idea.
She wants.
Yeah, she wants to,
of her own volition.
But she didn't even know. Like, she didn't know that she wanted to until her.
She knows. She wants to. She just doesn't know it.
No. Listen. She didn't know how fun it was until she tried it. So how do you get her to try it? She's in an all girls league with just her friends, and it's fun for her. So that's what I would recommend for your wife. See if she can get a league together with just her friends where they play fantasy baseball, start a little tradition, and maybe she'll be like, oh, I really enjoy this. Or share a team with you. That's another option. Oh, that's awesome.
I love my wife. There's lots of things I like to do with her. Unless she's expressing an interest that I want to come play fantasy baseball, I am not. It sounds kind of like trying to get your wife to come play golf with you. Like, if she wants to play golf and you play golf together, great. But if it's not something she already enjoys,
Doesn't know that she doesn't know how great it is until she tries it. That's the thing.
Okay.
All right. Next email.
There's two of us that are married that are laughing at this question.
Next
one of us
email.
That is going to be.
Yeah, but I'm the only one who has a significant other that plays fantasy.
Right. That's true.
Right. You are. Yeah.
So there we go. Brett in Lowell, Michigan says, "Dear Peter, Joe, and Glenn." It's Family Guy. Come on.
Okay.
Can you provide some mid to late round guys who should provide good on base percentage?
Carlos Santana?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was going. Joe Panic. Denard Span. Basically the guys I drafted.
Matt Duffy.
Head-to-head points league. Duffy, okay. I don't feel, well, at least he didn't walk enough last year. He walked a lot in the minors, but, he doesn't walk. I think he walked like 29 times last year. So I would not say him, but, I mean, depending how deep you want to go, how important it is, Nick Markakis gets on base a lot, may do nothing else, but Nori Aoki.
Gotcha. Ugh.
I know. We're getting more in the late round types.
Well, hey,
now.
If Aoki leads off for the Mariners, does he become fantasy relevant?
He needs to steal bases.
I don't think he's
already relevant. It's just how relevant.
Yeah.
He's fringy waiver wire material now.
We got one from Jared. He says, "Has anyone ever mentioned how much Heath and Al sound alike? It's extremely hard for me to tell the difference."
I get that a lot.
I think it's outrageous.
I think the main thing is, I don't know if it's so much like the tone of our voices, but we're the two nicest guys on the podcast. And so
you gotta be kidding.
We're both saying nice things all the time. People get that confused.
Let me say something here on that. Because of Heath's presence, Scott and Al are now the two nice guys. You have dragged me down into like not being
See,
nice.
See, I guy. Feel like Scott is much nicer in person than he is on the podcast.
Really?
Yeah.
Now he's the same guy.
I think nice, if I nice worked everyone. Where you worked and I'd never actually met Scott and only talked to him on the podcast, I'd probably think he was a jerk.
What do you mean? I've met Scott many times.
Right, but I'm saying if I hadn't.
If you hadn't.
If you
just saw my podcast persona.
Yeah.
Or heard it.
Yeah, you know, nice is pretty boring. Nice is pretty boring.
Yeah. Said Al is just so nice, isn't he? Al's just such a nice
And
guy.
Al's not boring.
Al's not boring.
No,
Al's
not.
Al can, Al, you know, it works for some people, it doesn't work for others. For me, it'd be boring. So, you know, I gotta be a little confrontational. And plus, I just really care about this fantasy baseball stuff, so it brings out the feistiness in me.
Next email is from Brian in Illinois. He says, "Hey, Omar, Bunk, and Jimmy." It is The Wire. The Wire.
Okay. I've not seen that, but I want to.
Okay.
"I am in the process of planning an auction strategy for my 12-team mixed league. Which would you rather have for a roster of 6 starting pitchers? I can probably do either option for about $75 out of my $260 budget. Option A, 4 of the following." I'll just pick 4. "Price, DeGrom, Harvey, and Kluber. Plus,
wow,
yeah, What? Really? You think you can get them and Cole Hamels and Yordano Ventura for $75? Price, nope, DeGrom, Harvey, Kluber, Hamels, and Ventura. Or Kershaw, Price, Hamels, Carlos Martinez, and two $1 pitchers that I can get off the wire. Hence
option
the,
A for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if it really is possible, I'd rather have four than just Kershaw. Four aces than just Kershaw.
Well, but it would be Kershaw plus one of those four, or all four of them.
Okay, you're right. Kershaw plus one or four. Yeah, I'd rather have the four, but realistically, it's probably going to be three. And realistically, neither of these is going to happen for $75.
Yeah, seems crazy. But he's in, maybe he's in a league where they just don't care about pitching. All right, a few more. Don't know who this is from. Let's say he's Matt. He says, "Dear Parkman, Haywood, and Carlos Liston." Listone. Does anybody know that? Yes, I knew it.
Okay. What is it?
Those are three like bad guys in the Major League series. Carlos Liston is from Back to the Minors. Jack Parkman, Clue Hayward, and Carlos Liston. Last email here. The good was last year's Josh Donaldson. My team name was Mr. Miyagi and Donaldson. My bad was McCutcheon with the fifth overall pick, and the ugly was Chris Davis. Which players this year within the first three rounds could be the good, the bad, and the ugly?
Okay. Let's see. I will go with the good is going to be Scott. Go first.
I was pulling up the draft results so I could have a word bank to choose from here. All right. The good in the first three rounds is going to be AJ Pollock.
Okay.
The bad is going to be Chris Davis.
Wow. For no reason. We need to have a Chris Davis argument next week.
Perfect.
The ugly is going to be Troy Tulowitzki.
Okay. I'll say the good is going to be Mookie Betts. The bad is going to be in the first three rounds. The bad is going to be Starling Marte for that price. And the ugly is going to be Miggy.
Oh, wow, yeah, that's good. I'll just give a good and say it's Springer, because we're out of time here. George Springer is my fave. First-round pick next year. That's Heath Cummings and Scott White. Thank you all for listening. Have a great weekend, everybody. We will talk to you on Monday.